You are listening to Upfront. I am Kat Brooks.
And I'm Brian Edwards-Tiekert. Hurricane Irma was the strongest Atlantic storm in recorded history. It came right after another hurricane, Harvey, caused billions of dollars of damage in Houston. And a third hurricane, Jose, could hit the East Coast as early as next week. So the obvious question is, can we finally start calling this climate change?
We're joined by Dr. Michael Weiner, senior staff scientist in the Computational Research Division at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. He works on extreme weather event attribution. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So, can you connect a specific storm to climate change now?
Well, it's a complicated question, and we don't generally say climate change caused such an event, any kind of event, in fact. But we do definitely talk about how climate change affected individual events. And we do that in two different ways. The first way is we look at the event as it happened and say, how did climate change affect the chances of this particular extreme event, this particular hurricane, reaching the intensity that it did? A related question is, given the fact that this hurricane happened, or this extreme weather event, this heat wave, whatever it is, how did climate change affect the magnitude of that event? These are closely related questions that we can address with our current technologies.
I know we want to get into the ways in which climate change intensified the storms, but we've heard this from a couple of guests now about just being really sketchy about saying that climate change caused it. Why is that? Why can we not say climate change caused this?
Well, causality is a very deep philosophical subject. And I'm not actually equipped to debate philosophy. Also, when you think about a weather event, there are many different causes. You know, you have to have the local meteorology right for a hurricane to happen. It has to be warm enough. You know, these kinds of things, you know, have always happened prior to the human intervention in the climate system. And so this question of how did climate change influence an event is a much better posed question for us to ask.
Well, so let's dig into the two questions you raised then. How much it increased the likelihood of this storm, and how much it increased the intensity of this storm. Let's take Irma.
Well, Irma's a difficult storm, and in fact, it's extremely difficult to make any statements ahead of time. I will make one about Harvey. And we really take this one storm at a time. And what we do, we invented a technology in our group, which we call hindcasting technology. You know, you're familiar with a weather forecast. That's what we've been watching all week, the forecasts of Hurricane Irma's track, which was a very difficult storm to forecast. What we do is what we call a hindcast. We do a forecast, but after it's happened. That's why it's a hindcast. And we do two different sets of hindcasts. One is a hindcast of the storm as realistically as possible as it actually happened. Then we do a hypothetical hindcast in the hypothetical world where humans did not interfere with the climate system. And then we compare those two sets of hindcasts. We published a paper recently where we showed this methodology not on a hurricane, but on devastating floods in Colorado in September of 2013. There we demonstrated that this kind of technique, these kinds of weather forecasting models, were well suited for this kind of task. Everything has to be kind of lined up right for us to make these kinds of rather direct attribution statements. And we won't know that until we do the calculations, which take a couple weeks.
Hmm. So you said you had something about Harvey?
So we've done this to a couple of storms, and we're working on the papers right now, a couple of hurricanes. And a few of them, most of them intensify, a few of them don't. And I think we understand that. It has to do with the different ways that a hurricane responds to increased temperature through the vertical structure of the storm. But all of these storms, when we do this warming to the planet, either from present-day warming or into the future, all of them rain more. So Hurricane Harvey, let's talk about Hurricane Harvey. Hurricane Harvey, the main impact there was an impact from the winds, but the main impact was the copious amount of precipitation that fell in Houston.
52 inches in some places.
52 inches. That's, you know, unbelievable. That's taller than, you know, most pre-teenagers. That's a tremendous amount of rain. And so my contention is that we know ahead of time that climate change increased the amount of precipitation that fell in Houston. How much? Well, we have some good theoretical arguments for it being based on an attributable warming in the Gulf of Mexico, where the moisture came from, of just under 2 degrees centigrade during the hurricane season, of a 10 to 15% increase in the total precipitation. So without climate change, Hurricane Harvey would have been a devastating event, no question about it. What climate change did is made it a little bit worse. And that little bit could be a big impact because, you know, you're already talking about a severe event. You make a severe event just a little bit worse, and the impacts can be quite a bit worse.
10 to 15%, that's 5 to 8 inches of rain?
Yeah, you know, that order. And with Harvey, there are two interesting questions. One that's easy, this one about the precipitation. The other is much harder, and that is, what caused Hurricane Harvey to stall? Or better yet, did climate change alter the chances of it stalling? That's a very difficult question. I don't have any idea, actually. But colleagues of ours do, and they will be testing those ideas, I'm sure, over the next couple of years. So both of these storms offer, you know, as tragic as they are, and they are indeed tragedies, do offer opportunities in scientific opportunities because of the very high quality data that is captured in these kind of events. And this fact that Irma was the most intense in terms of winds, the highest winds recorded in the Atlantic ever, is completely consistent with what specialists in this area have been saying for the last 5 years or so, that climate change will make the most intense storms more intense, or conversely, there'll be more Category 4 and more Category 5 storms throughout the planet. And I feel comfortable in saying that there's a pretty wide consensus view on that statement. And so Irma falls into that kind of question, you know, did climate change affect this storm in that way? It certainly is consistent with what we expected.
Can you walk us through the mechanics of that? How does climate change, how do warming temperatures make storms more intense?
Well, let's talk about hurricanes and tropical cyclones.
Sure.
There are at least two things that are going on. Well, three. There's the precipitation thing, because there's more in these situations, the amount of moisture in the air is increased because it's warmer. This is a rather simple relationship, it's called in. It's been known since the 19th century in steam engine technology. It's called the Clausius-Clapeyron relationship, and it tells us that the saturation humidity increases by 6% of degree centigrade warming. And so, you know, we know that. That's observed. We know that is attributable to humans. So it's going to rain more. That's pretty much a given. Now, the question about winds, which is the question for Irma, and there we have two effects going on. One is the warming at the surface causes
the
ocean temperatures has an effect of making the storm more intense. By that I mean the winds are higher and the central pressure is lower. But the warming aloft, that'd be the warming at the top of the storm, has the opposite effect. And that's because it affects the efficiency at which energy is transported from the surface to the top of the storm. So on any individual storm, it's a balance. And so until we do these kind of calculations, we don't know which one wins. Now, we do know that most of the time the surface wins.
How does this play out in other places seeing flooding right now, South Asia, the Niger Delta?
Oh, that's an excellent question. In fact, we have a research interest on climate change and its impacts of severe weather in developing nations. You know, developing nations are generally the least well-equipped to deal with intense weather, and witness that in Hurricane Irma. I mean, you know, the islands had far more people die than in the more densely populated Florida Peninsula. And this is because the United States is a wealthy country. It can put emergency planning in a place that developing nations cannot. And so they're more at risk. So the consequences of these changes in extreme weather can be more devastating. I think that this general rule of thumb that intense storms have more rain in them as it gets warmer applies across a wide variety of storms, including some of these recent storms in the Indian subcontinent, which we have not analyzed. I'd like to. We'll see if we can get the necessary data. U.S. storms are a bit easier to analyze because the data collection is so good.
So if your models are showing that, say, 10 to 15% of the rainfall in Harvey is attributable to climate change now, what does the trend look like? Like, if climate change continues on its current trajectory, how bad are things in 10, 20, 30 years?
Well, I don't think you need me to tell you that it's going to get more intense. You know, and if you understand the basic physics that, you know, the warmer atmosphere holds more water, and that's how big storms happen, that you have a fully saturated column of air. As it gets warmer, it's, of course, going to be more intense. How much warmer the world is at, say, the middle of the century or the end of the century depends a lot on how much carbon dioxide we continue to put into the atmosphere. Now, if we stop today, it's still going to be warmer at the middle of the century, but we're not stopping today, and so it'll be yet warmer again.
If we did stop today, is there a way to roll back the clock? Can we fix it?
So you're asking, is climate change reversible? And the answer is not on human timescales, unless one does some kind of rather risky geoengineering, which is not my specialty, but that would be the only way to reverse the warming that we've already had, which is about 1 degree of centigrade globally in since the pre-industrial era.
So I've never thought of California as a place that sees catastrophic storms. But as you pointed out, we had these intense rains last winter, landslides in big parts of the coastal mountains. It got me digging into the history of when there was a persistent atmospheric river pattern in, like, 1862? Created a 600-mile-long lake in the Central Valley. Governor Leland Stanford went to his inauguration in a boat. What's our storm risk here in California under a continued warming scenario?
Well, you know, it's be difficult to pin down the numbers, but it's clearly higher. And, you know, this year we had a major evacuation below the Oroville Dam. You know, that was a lot of people were impacted. You know, they on very short notice, they needed to leave their homes without knowing whether or not there'd be a home to return to when they came back, because, you know, the water resource managers were concerned about the integrity of the dam. So, you know, in some sense, you know, we're as vulnerable or more vulnerable than we were back before we had a very highly managed water system.
Rising sea levels are another concern. What does that look like as we move forward into the future with climate change?
Well, this is a little outside of my expertise, although I do have opinions about it. You know, sea level has risen by an observable amount. It varies from one location on the coastline to another, but it's mostly going up. And that is mostly due to the thermal expansion of the water, of the ocean itself as it warms. Warmer water takes a larger volume than colder water. But then the biggest question, of course, is what happens to the large ice sheets on Greenland and western Antarctica. There's great uncertainty in that. There are colleagues of mine at Lawrence Berkeley National Lab who have very interesting models of the ice sheet in Antarctica. But I think we are still some time from making a definitive statement about, say, the stability of the western ice sheet, the western Antarctic ice sheet, which is a cause for great concern, because if that were to slide into the ocean, it would be many, many feet of sea level rise, impacting pretty much anyone who lived anywhere near the coast.
So can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
You know, I've gone through stretches where I had to cover climate change every day for 2 weeks in a row, covering international climate talks, and I would be incredibly depressed by the end. What does it do to you to think about this stuff every day of your professional life?
Well, that's a difficult question. Most of the time, I can think of it as an academic interest and try to put the human question not out of my mind, but in the back of my mind. But occasionally it comes up to the front, and I'll give you an example. I was in Europe for 2 weeks, and the only thing you can watch on television in Prague that I could understand was the news, which I don't normally watch. And it was during a heat wave in Pakistan, and many people died. It was a very severe event. And I remember a father. I'm a father. My children are grown. But I remember a father who was distraught, of course, because his two children had died. And that touched me, you know, just in, you know, a very deep way. And so I decided, I tried to look at that heat wave, and it turned out to be scientifically a really interesting heat wave. It was, it turned out that it was not so really actually that hot. It was hot. It was a combination of heat and humidity that was very, very rare and very deadly. And we did make an attribution statement on that. we wrote in a publication called the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society that climate change made that combination of heat and humidity 1,000 times more likely than it would have been had humans not intervened in the climate system. That's a very large number. You know, it basically was not quite impossible without climate change, but climate change did enable it to happen.
What weather events are most impacted by climate change?
Heat waves are the most obvious. You can make a statement about a heat wave in advance that's going to be pretty defensible to a more detailed analysis after the event. For our recent one in the Bay Area in California, I made a statement ahead of time based on calculations that were done by a number of modeling groups that we coordinate at Berkeley Lab, that about 2 to 4 degrees Fahrenheit of the heat wave was attributable to humans. Or the other question that we talked about at the beginning about the likelihood, it was made 4 to 7 times more likely to reach the observed magnitude.
Okay.
We good. A lot of our listeners are very concerned about climate change. They push us on it a lot. And I want to read something that we got from a listener, and I want to get your opinion about how, because that sounds catastrophic, right? And we've been talking about these floods and the Arctic falling into the ocean. Falling into the ocean. Says, your coverage of climate change is tepid and misleading. The situation is dire, and human extinction in the near term is highly likely. Atmospheric CO2 levels are skyrocketing, and human habitat, i.e. grain production and storage, is imperiled. Planetary hospice is our only option.
There's a lot in that statement, some of which I wouldn't subscribe to. Did he say extinction?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, I wouldn't go there. I do think that climate change is an extremely important and dangerous topic. I mean, it will impact not so much us. I think it has impacted us, but it'll impact our children, especially our grandchildren, in ways that we can't even begin to know. You know, if you look at projections of the future under what I call the no policy scenario, where we make no concerted efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, we're talking at a 3 to 4 degrees centigrade warmer planet. This is something that no human has ever lived on before. And so it's not a planet we have any experience with. On the other hand, you know, we're an adaptable species, and we will figure out, you know, how to survive. There will be costs. What they are, you know, I can't really say, but I sense in that listener some despair, and it is easy to have despair. I often do. I don't think that people like me and my colleagues are taken seriously enough. You know, it's not like any of this is news. We've been talking about it for a long time. But on the other hand, you know, you do sense that there is some rising awareness and some willingness to do something rather serious about climate change. It will not be easy. I mean, it is an expensive proposition to make changes in our lifestyle that are significant enough to make a difference. It also takes a long time. You know, things that we do today in terms of, you know, changing the way we get our energy won't have a noticeable effect on the climate for a long time, you know, probably after my lifetime. And so, you know, I think we have to realize that this is a multi-generational problem and requires that kind of thinking.
Dr. Michael Wehner, thank you so much for coming in to talk to us.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Michael Wehner is a senior staff scientist in the Computational Research Division at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. He works on extreme weather event attribution. You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiegert.
And I'm Kat Brooks.